Hello. Good to see everyone. Wendy and AJ excited. I knew that you were gonna be together last night, and I was not expecting to see you together on the I have to say, there's so many, as you all know, doing this work that I do and that you do, there's so many things that I love about it that make me feel just so deeply fulfilled. But one of the things at the top is when people connect, like through me and through this community, and create friendships and relationships and support. It feels so happy. It's good to see everyone. I want to say I missed you while I was gone. I almost always miss you, but I didn't miss you while I was gone. I didn't think about anything when I was gone. But it's good to be back. And it's great to see all of you. And I'm so happy that we have class today. So, a couple of first, just housekeeping or logistical pieces that I want to make sure that I mentioned. And I'll remind you of this, but just so that you know ahead of time, the question always comes up, how long? Because we're in the last month. We're in the last month of the program. We're really in the home stretch. And the question always comes up, what's going to happen with the Facebook group once we're done? And what I have really found just like over and over again over the years of holding groups and Facebook groups is that if I leave the Facebook group open indefinitely or too long after the program ends, it just kind of like fizzles out in a weird energetic way, even though everybody has the best of intentions and it doesn't work. And so I like to just like it's so important to start containers and end containers in sessions and in programs. I think it's important to kind of end the container of the Facebook group as well. I know that there are things that some of you, some conversations or whatever in there that some of you might want to download and keep. There might still be some connecting and conversing that wants to happen in there after our last day. So we'll leave it open for a week after our last day of class. So it'll be open until November 30th. So if there's anything that you need in there to do in there or receive from there, whatever it is, know that that's available until the 30th. I don't know if the team sent it out yet. I asked them to before I went away. If they haven't, they'll do it in the next couple of days. Just if anybody wants to be added to the contact list for the class, I don't just give out your names and contact info. I want to get your permission first. So if you want to be added, and then we'll share an updated list for anybody that wants to keep in touch that way. And of course, just in terms of the Facebook group and keeping in touch, if you're not already a member in my larger public Facebook group, that's there. I always share content there. It's a great place to ask questions as well. It's called the Coaching Revolution. And I would love to see you there. Any questions on Facebook? Okay. I think I've answered this question before, but it just popped up because I know sometimes people ask it. You have the recordings for life and all the materials in the member center for life. I don't do like, you don't have it once we're done with the program. So I always say, so long as my business is running and I'm sustaining a member center, you've got all of that. So it's there for you to go back to whenever you need it. The other piece I wanted to mention is the open house next week, or a reminder about the open house next week. It's been great to see you registering and inviting your friends. And first, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for doing that. I so appreciate it. I so appreciate just all the sharing about the work that we've been doing together. I'm excited for the open house. We're going to be looking at we're going to be doing learning a somatic technique. We're going to be looking at archetypes, and we're going to be doing some work around our leadership. So it's definitely just a good, if you have the time, I recommend. So as a reminder, that open house is next Wednesday, from 12 to 1:30 Eastern. You need to opt in from the emails in order to get the Zoom information. It's not going to be this link. So to get all the information for it, please continue to invite anyone you know that you think would love this work. Amy this week posted on Facebook about it, which I appreciated so much. So if that's something that any of you want to do, please feel free to do that as well. Yeah, and Amy, Wendy, and AJ are together. Okay. So, with all that, let's jump into our work for today. We're looking at self-love today. I like to think that the entire program is also really about self-love. We're just kind of honing in on it specifically today, but almost every thread that we've looked at, every technique that we've looked at can be related to it. We'll be kind of getting some foundational principles down today and then looking at some strategies, but I'll just remind you, so many of the techniques that we looked at can be used to apply to this topic. We're going to be looking at some different ones today. So, why are we exploring self-love in a coach and practitioner training program? Well, for like 100 reasons, but here are just a few. Even if we want to kind of look at like coaching is about achieving goals, which of course we've learned in Sacred Depths, it's that, but so much more. But even if we want to look at it through that lens, self-love is a vital component to either achieving goals, or if you're a get it done person like me, it is a vital component. If you're going to get the goal done anyway, it is a vital component to getting it done while being kind to yourself. And one of my philosophies, just kind of in life, it's harder sometimes to apply it to myself, but I apply it to my clients and my client work all the time, is that it's not just about achieving the goal, but it is how you are achieving the goal and what your experience of it is and how you are being to yourself. Without some self-love, it is often a little more difficult to support a client who is stuck. Self-love in one way or another is always going to be part of the antidote to moving past the stuck place. And then, of course, for clients who know how to achieve really well, but they do it without the self-love, they may get to the end and not feel happy or not feel fulfilled. Another reason why we're looking at this topic is because as practitioners, we also need to love ourselves. It's not just about our clients loving themselves, but it's about us loving ourselves. And as we kind of look at the material for today, it's important to set out and say this. As with almost everything that we have looked at and explored here in Sacred Depths, the journey towards self-love or more evolved self-love is a journey. It's a process. It is a marathon and not a sprint. I've never just seen it flip in an instant. Okay, so as I said, so much of what we've already learned, techniques, all of that can be applied, but we're going to kind of look at some different approaches today to self-love. Now, I have my own definition of self-love, which has changed and shifted over the years. I've really come to learn, like so many things, the definition of self-love is a living, breathing entity. It continuously evolves as I evolve. And because it's personal, I'm not going to define it for you. I'm going to ask you to define it for yourself right now. So take a few moments and jot down, what does self-love mean to you? I'd love for you to share some definitions in the chat. Brenda's saying self-love is accepting where I am without justification, guilt, or judgment. Beautiful. Yeah, so we're gonna talk about some of your definition in a little bit. Good. Amy's saying having compassion for and openness to all parts of ourselves, giving ourselves the same focus, gentleness, and attention we would give another, appreciating our personalities, bodies, idiosyncrasies, being on our own side and team and not against ourselves. Yes. Izzy is saying our capacity for compassion, respect, courtesy, and consideration turned inward. These are also beautiful. Michael is saying it feels like a zingy hug from my heart to my all. AJ's saying deep acceptance, kindness, patience, and forgiveness to my soul and my actions. Yes. Lara's saying self-love is forgiveness and acknowledging that I operate in the world with the tools that I've been given. These are beautiful. Randa's saying loving on, being kind, caring, and compassionate with and to myself, accepting all of me, treating myself with love. Lisa's saying an embodiment of accepting self. No, oh, an embodiment of accepting self, no matter what feelings and thoughts we have. Beautiful. All of these. Alta's saying self-love looks like honoring my truth and holding myself accountable for my desires. Yes. Barbara's saying knowing that I am valued and inextricably connected to the interdependence of all beings in the universe. Love these. And some of you are hitting on some of the pieces that we're going to be looking at today for sure. Take a moment as you look at your definition of self-love. Just note for yourself if it's changed or shifted or evolved over the years. Is it different than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? I think for many definitions, but particularly the definition, when we look at our evolution of the definition of self-love, it kind of mirrors a lot of our own inner evolution that we've done. Here's another question to think about. What have you been holding back from lately? In part because you could be cultivating a little bit more self-love right now. So, what have you been holding back from lately because of not enough self-love? What have you been holding back from lately because of not enough self-love? And even if you've cultivated a lot of it, I promise there are edges. So Izzy's saying she's been restoration and joy equals trying to get all the things done at all costs, including to my health and emotional well-being. Yeah. Marianne is saying that some of what she's holding back from is not setting boundaries where you could or should for fear of backlash or repercussions. I know that these boundaries would be an act of self-love, but there is that false safety of protecting myself. Yeah. Nella saying doing my PT exercises to heal my needs. Barbara saying not honoring time constraints and how I can best spend my time. Yeah. Michael and saying, I do have negative self-talk more than I would like. Constant vigilance to catch that with love. Yes. Amy saying, developing my curriculum for my offering, but it turned around yesterday with Jolly's awesome coaching. Entertaining my self-doubt. AJ's saying, yeah. So, some of you have already started to answer this next question in the last, but I'll ask it anyway just to kind of get some different insight. What do you know are some telltale signs for you when you're not really in the energy of self-love? What are some signs for you that can let you know who? Not really loving myself right now. And because I know we're all like speak for all of us, like we're all self-help junkies. We've thought about this topic for decades. It's like it's still important to come back to some of these basics, right? It's often the basic things that that we are important to come back to embody more deeply, to catch ourselves more quickly when we're not in that self-love place. So the answers to these questions for some of you, it might be completely new things that are coming through. For others, it might be, oh God, this again. I know this already, but it's important to look at it again. So what are some of those telltale signs for you that you're not really in that energy of self-love? Altusing, when I start feeling guilt for my choices. Kelly's saying, I get more critical of self and others and life because I'm not well resourced internally. Feeling not enoughness in any area. Nella's saying, yes. Brenda's saying, not setting boundaries. That boundaries piece has come up a bunch of times in the chat already. Not pausing and checking in to see if I'm in alignment with agreements that I make. Yes. Randa's saying, when I get stressed or snappy, when I question my decisions, or when I drop into comparison with others. Yeah, these are all so important for us to acknowledge and know for ourselves, and also to know this is human behavior for when we're working with our clients. Amy's saying, frantic, scattered, moving too quickly, doing too much too fast, hiding, making excuses to be alone. Marianne is saying, pit in my stomach, feel like I'm tolerating things and settling, and it grates against my being. Snappy McSnapper pants. All right, let's pause here. I'd love to hear one or two voices on what's feeling important so far here for you or for your client work. What's feeling important, or how is this relevant to your client work? Who wants to share? Izzy.
Hi everyone. Something that came to my mind is how, as coaches, I think, as coaches, as clients, as human beings, self-love really does play a huge role in, well, especially as we work with shadow and our blocks and all of the messy parts of ourselves. It's so easy, at least for me, to feel like I'm always doing this work, like there's never enough work to be done, that I'm always going to be messy. I'm always going to be like messy, gooey puddle of messiness. And and the truth is, it's like as human beings, we are messy, we're complicated, we're a paradox of all the things. And so, I was reflecting on how understanding and embodying self-love is so much more than like bubble baths with a plate of chocolate on the side. Like it really is about that self-acceptance and really accepting that we are human instead of trying to be these perfect robots or God even. It's an embrace of our humanity.
Yes, 100%. We'll be looking more deeply at that in a few minutes, but so beautifully said. And I'm glad you're bringing this perfection piece into it, to like back to everything we've looked at in Myth of Perfection. It's so related. Thank you, Michaelin.
Ah, this is a big question, and I just had this like told to me yesterday by a friend that this is something that I do with people, and I didn't have words for it before. But it's easy for me, or I've built the skill of detecting when people are not in self-love, and it shows up as either like false modesty of, oh, I couldn't possibly, or I'm not good enough, or I suck at this, or this other side of false superiority or perfection of like, I'm the only one that can do this, like nobody can take my place. And when people are saying things like that, there's this invitation, there's this like hand on my back that wants to just call them on it. And I'm just noticing that from a perspective of self-love, there's got to be the right moment and the entree and the invitation to do that. And anything less than that is not loving, is not self-loving, is not loving to the client. But when it is, like when I've been invited to do it and I do it, and there's sort of that confrontive question about it or challenging question, It's such a powerful moment that they get to see themselves in that way and shed the false modesty and shed the false superiority and just like be who they really are,
yeah.
which is usually pretty glorious.
Yeah, right? I love that. I can feel the energy of it just as you're speaking and in that moment when the client gets to see that. Yes, 100%. And this, what you're speaking to, these two poles, the modesty, the false modesty or the false superiority is also very much related to shadow. Usually when something is in shadow, in this case, self-love, it will go to one or two extremes in the expression of it. So nice. Yeah. Anna, and then Marianne, I see you're in the chat that you want to share, and you can come on right after Anna.
Hi, I'm in a cafe at the moment, so apologies if the background music is really loud. But what's coming up for me in this moment, like self-love has been very present on my journey for a number of years now, and the way that it's shown up in the past is really like a radical acceptance and compassion for however I'm feeling in the moment. And sometimes that allows me to like excuse not stepping into the things that I actually really desire or giving myself a reason to just like, it's okay if you do all these things that you know you don't want to do, like you're fine. And now I think my edge is becoming like if I really loved myself, allowing myself to really step into the dreams that I have for my life and the things that I really desire that like in the moment don't always feel super good. So yeah, making space for like letting myself actually have the life that I want and the dreams that I want and that still having the compassion along the way, but not excusing the inaction or the avoidance of those things.
I love that. I'm so glad you're sharing that because it really speaks to the importance of like this, of the subtlety of human experience, as well as the importance of honoring what is, without letting that kind of pull a client down, right? Because two things can exist at once. We can acknowledge and honor that, like in this moment, I do not feel like doing this thing, and honor that while at the same moment acknowledging that that's just a feeling in the moment. And in order to move towards the desire, there might be discomfort in the moment. And so allowing that those things to live together and supporting our clients to, and we've seen this in lots of different ways throughout the program, but because of your share, Anna, I just want to pull this out. One of the things that we do in this Sacred Depths work with our clients is teach them how to hold more than one thing at a time, to teach them how to hold nuance and paradox. I can be scared and I can also move forward. Both can exist at the same time. I cannot feel like doing this right now, and I can also do this right now. Both things can exist in the same moment. We can hold nuance. And the more nuance that we can hold as human beings, the more we have all of ourselves to work with. So that like we're not denying what the feeling is or what the fear is or what the concern is or like the messiness or the this and the that, but we don't also give all the power to that. We're resourcing all the pieces. Thank you. Marianne.
So I have really kind of a marketing related question about self-love, because as a marketer, and I've worked primarily with like coaches and consultants for many years and have a full-time job where we're working with that population. There's a lot of things that we do in coaching that like don't sell when you talk about them in your messaging, and self-love is a huge, huge thing that we do. And if your message is, I'm going to help you get self-love, like people do not pay for that. And I'm really curious in your experience, and we've seen it different ways, and I have some thoughts, but I know you've been doing this for so much longer with so many more people, and I'm really curious, like, what you've seen be successful in terms of positioning, because you have to kind of, self-love is one of those things that, like, people don't always know they need. You might have a small percentage of people who know they need it, but you have to speak to, like, the problem they know they have and the result they know they want, even though you can go behind the scenes and go way deeper with them. So I'm just really curious how you've seen that position successfully. Yeah.
It's such a great question. And you actually don't want to use, I mean, this is my opinion, so take it as, you don't want to use the term self-love in your marketing. It doesn't mean anything, but even like I'm going back through the chat to see some of what you wrote, use the specifics, right? Pit in my stomach, feel like I'm tolerating things, not setting the boundaries, and then connect that to the results that they want, right? You're not setting boundaries, and therefore your clients are working all over you. You're not setting the rates, blah, 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 blah. You're settling for the things that grate against your being. And then blah, 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 blah. So you don't, naming the self-love is just like a wash.
Yeah.
But getting to the specifics of the definition, relating it to the results, that works.
Symptoms and results. Makes total sense. So I was just curious what you've seen, but yeah, it's a great example pulled right from the chat. So cool. Yeah. Thanks.
Great question. Yeah. Okay, good. So, Amy. Yeah. And then we're going to move on after Amy.
I just want to say something about this, that I just feel like culturally we're like anti-self-love. It like falls into the realm of narcissism, and like nobody wants to be seen actually appreciating themselves or liking themselves. It's much cooler to be like, to shit on yourself, you know, to like put yourself down. That's cool. That's okay. We're all taught that. Everybody does that. At least I'm from the East Coast, and that's
that's how you get your badge of 100% absolutely. Yeah. And you're sharing, and really, like, everybody here is so smarty pants, because we're gonna go into what you just said. So many things that were already shared. We're gonna go, like, you're all already ahead of me. But yes, to that, that is one. What we're looking at, gonna look at next, is the things that hold us back. Like, it seems easy enough. Okay, we're gonna do all these self-love things. We're gonna love ourselves. But what is holding us back? And that is one of them. And I'll get to back to what you're saying in a couple of minutes for sure. But I'm glad you're bringing that in. It's so true. It's often not acceptable to love yourself, even for all the talk, right? Okay, good. So yeah, let's go deeper with that. So even when we're evolved and coachified and therapized, and we know how important self-love is, why is it sometimes so difficult to get there or to stay there? So a couple of reasons. Number one, a little bit of a different take on what Amy just said, but related. Culture, and when I say culture, I mean culture, parents, systems, institutions don't prioritize it. Culture doesn't prioritize devoting time and energy to self-love. Culture does prioritize devoting time and energy to achievement and productivity, but not often to self-love. Another reason, because culture often tells us that you're valuable and worthy if you produce and achieve, but not that you are inherently worthy simply because you are a living being, that you are worthy and worthy of love and self-love because of your existence, period. It's like we need to earn the right to be worthy enough for love in this culture. And because in this culture, we are never doing enough because of the emphasis on productivity and achievement, we've never earned it, and we can't earn it. It's like it's like the carrot is always being pushed out further and further and further, and we don't get it, right? I'm just catching in the chat, Carla, we're going to talk about self-love and self-care later. I got you covered. Like I said, you're all smarty pants. You've all already been mentioning everything or a lot of what we're going to be talking about. Here's another reason why the self-love piece can be so difficult. Because dominant culture has a very explicit, narrow, and biased view of what is lovable, beautiful, and worthy. Because dominant culture has a very explicit, narrow, and biased view of what is lovable, beautiful, and worthy. And that dominant culture view was generally created by white, rich, cisgendered, able-bodied people. Oftentimes, if you fall out of any of that dominant, it's this feeling of not worthy. Here's another reason why self-love can be difficult, because our culture is also ridden with hierarchical thinking. This is better than that, and this is better than that, right? Whatever the this and the that is. Straight hair is better than curly hair. College education is better than no college education. This kind of career, you know, marriage is better than single. Right, insert whatever it is. Our culture is founded on hierarchies. And when you are taught either explicitly or just through messaging that one type of person, for whatever reason, is less than another type of person, for whatever reason or the topic is, even if you're on top there, that hierarchical thinking is inside of you, and it's gonna dictate that you have a lot of less than as well inside of you. It's good, right? And that holds you back. Another reason why self-love can be hard, as Amy said, culture tells us that we are X. Insert any negative word you want to put there. You are selfish. You are foolish. You are too full of yourself, right? Like if you think highly of yourself or love yourself. At the same time, culture also gives us this other message that there's something wrong with you if you don't have self-confidence. It's like, right? Have self-confidence, but make sure you don't have too much self-confidence, because then that means, right? And I don't want to like gender things too much, but I think that comes into play for women a lot. And of course, if you've experienced trauma, which we all have in one way or another, that might stand in the way of self-love. And then of course, all the modeling, you know, the ways that parents may have modeled or others, how we see others treating themselves. All right, let me ask you some questions about this. I am going to guess that on the surface, you believe wholeheartedly in the importance of loving yourself, as I do. If there are some beliefs underneath the surface that maybe go against that, what are they? So if you've got some of below the surface beliefs about the loving yourself, and maybe it's not so good, or it means this or that or the other thing, or I could never love myself because I haven't yet achieved X, or you know, what are some of those beliefs that are maybe rolling around inside? Angela, I love your question. I'm going to wait on it till the end, but we can definitely make time and space for it. I think it's a great question. So even if above the surface, you're like, yes, self-love, and I, you know, like all the things, what are some of the underneath the surface, not so helpful beliefs you've got there about self-love? And please share in the chat. Self-love means always listening to my feelings. Ah, similar to what Anna was saying before, I love that. What if I'm wrong and I'm not as great as I think I am? Yeah. How can I justify loving myself if I'm not being true to my purpose? Brenda, I don't know if you're naming that as a belief or you're asking that, but we will talk about self-care, I promise, in a little bit. Carmen's saying, if I love myself too much, then I will really show up in my power and light, and that might make other people uncomfortable or mad at me. Yeah. Self-love means forgiving myself instead of holding myself accountable. Beautiful. So Randa's saying it's egotistical and it's selfish. It means that I don't care for others, right? So just as a side note, when you're working with yourself or working with a client, if you take a look at these beliefs and ask a similar question, you can use a rewiring process, rewiring a negative thought process on it, right? So we have or a befriend your fear process on it. So just as a reminder, you already have a lot of tools in your toolbox for this. All right, here's another question. What have you been taught about being lovable? What have you been taught about being lovable? It's earned. Amy was lucky to feel very loved as a child. So still, what have you been taught about being lovable with that, right? I'm lovable if I do X. Mm-hmm. It's safety. Someone will take care of you if you're lovable. Carla's saying, the belief my self-love is dependent on others. I feel my self-love when others love and approve of me. Yeah. Learning just again from these, everything in the chat, just think about like all that you can take in about human behavior and remembering, like, you know, this is just helping us understand the full range also of what our clients might be coming with. Kelly's saying you must do a lot and give a lot and smile a lot and not make others uncomfortable. Yep. I'm lovable when I'm good. Love is conditional on meeting someone else's needs. I'm lovable because I'm smart and get along with people. I'm not lovable and it's evil if I love myself. Mm-hmm. Here's another question. How are you currently tolerating others not fully loving and valuing you? How are you currently tolerating others not fully loving and valuing you? and like no judgment on this. I am currently tolerating some others not fully loving and valuing me. It doesn't mean like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me that I haven't gotten rid of those relationships or changed it, right? Like, so we're not using this to judge ourselves. We're using this for self-awareness. Yeah, Randa's saying when that happens, I feel like I need to justify my needs or prove myself more. Carla's saying the people I live with, I don't feel that they love and value me, and I'm pretty sure it's an inside job. All right, one more question for now. How have you been taught to not love others? How have you been taught to not love others? I really come from the kind of perspective or philosophy of inside is outside and outside is inside. So if we're not loving others, we're also not loving ourselves in some ways, and vice versa. Of course, there are always exceptions to every rule. But back to that hierarchical thinking thing I was talking about, if we think someone else is less than, that's internalized inside of us as well. Jen is saying, I was taught that others are dangerous and that it's unsafe to open up to them. Kelly's saying, I think I've been taught to not love others who are different from me, us, but my love pours out. I can't help how much I love people. Michaelyn's saying, I grew up with boys, so cracking a joke was always fun and loving. Now most of my adult girlfriends feel offended by that, so I have to watch myself. Yeah. All right, let's pause here. What's feeling important? What are you seeing? I'd love to hear. We still have a lot to look at today, so maybe one share. What's feeling important? What are you seeing? What's coming together so far? Anyone want to share? Going once, going twice. All right, then we'll keep on going. Okay.
Kelly raised her hand. I saw Kelly's hand go up.
Oh, I didn't see it. Go ahead, Kelly. I was looking for that little hand raise on the side. Sorry.
I forgot. I don't know. My buttons look different on the bottom. I'm again, just reflecting on how beautiful this work is, because things that might appear a certain way, like irritability or resistance or annoyance with someone else or criticism of someone else, could all be related back to the self-love. And it's like all these outward expressions of the lacking internal resourcing or internal love, they're like this mirage or this like cover. And when we pull back the cover, what's underneath there is this place of just needing more resourcing and love. And that to me is, it's just really beautiful and juicy and like such an easier fix than trying to address all the external expressions of it. That's all. I love this co-creation in this space of you asking questions and sharing the teaching, and then all of us sharing like our perspectives, and then seeing it kind of unfold there of what might be going on with clients or out in the world or in the political scene or on social media or what have you. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, so much wisdom in this group and important life experience and awareness in this group. And yeah, it's the self-love piece. I agree, like it's so at the core of so much. Okay, so what do we do with all of this? How do we help our clients and ourselves? So first of all, as I've already said a number of times, you already have so many tools in your toolbox already, creating awareness and questions and befriend your fear, rewiring and myth of perfection, or maybe a wheel of self-sabotage, you know, working a little archetypally with the energy of self-love, you know, so many things. And then for today, I want to kind of hone in on a couple of more strategies or inroads or things to think about and work with. And, you know, this could be like a year long course, right? So it's just, I've picked some of my favorites, you know, at the top of the list. So first piece, is supporting clients to learn, and excuse my language, I'm just gonna say it, but supporting clients to learn how to say fuck you to the patriarchy. To really support clients to be aware of the beliefs that have seeped in from culture, all the ones I was talking about before, and to challenge those beliefs inside of your clients. And to remember that those beliefs that they've maybe taken on without even consciously taking on, in unintentionally, you know, believe these things, that they have come from a power over mentality. They have come from a system that is in place to disempower. Doing that belief work, applying rewiring techniques to it, just creating awareness around it, all of that so important. Let me pause there. Anything that anybody wants to say on that? I wouldn't have said this 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, but really over the last three, four years, I've come to realize that a big piece of this work is about undoing the beliefs from culture and society. Barbara.
Yeah, I think this is so, so juicy because I was just saying to someone the other day, I just can't see life without a feminist framework. And you know, and I would call myself a radical feminist. So, you know, I just see it through that lens. And there was a conversation about use and abuse. And I was like, well, what about all of the ways that women care? Are they being used, you know, and abused if they're taking care of their infants? This is like way off track, but it's like, unless people kind of get that bigger perspective, they define things in such a narrow way, and it personally, or when they see the world outside of them, they define things in such a narrow way that's really, it undermines them, you know, and I wrote down, you know, have the beliefs come from their power, from the power over systems, right? It's about power over. So if you are not aware of the power over in your life, then how can you be empowered?
That's right.
But there's like all this empowerment out there. And it's like, yeah, well, let's look at where you're being disempowered. Because if you don't see that, you just make it about you and the little things without seeing the bigger picture that, you know, this is rampant.
Yeah. No, this is not just personal work. This is cultural work. Like it just is. There, you can't really have one without the other. It's like, yes, it's personal coaching, but it is, the context is so much bigger. And I hope, like for me, and I'm guessing for you, Barbara, and probably for most people here, is like, I love that that's part of my mission. I might not put that on my marketing necessarily, right? But that's part of my, like, I'm dismantling here, you know? Like, yes, absolutely.
Yes. Thank you.
Ayana.
Hey, just a little add-on kind of to what Barbara was saying on the topic of power. I've been doing a lot of meditation, and this weekend I was in a deep meditation. I saw this vision of, and our culture, that wasn't just the patriarchy, that it was just, like you're saying, the power over. And I could see that we're all like taught to come from our solar plexus, and that people are trying to connect from all the, you know, all these other places rather than their heart. And that when we learn to connect from our heart, you know, it's like, it's not that we don't need power, we need power, but power in self-mastery, not power in trying to have power over somebody else. And that our culture somehow got that all backwards and like left out the heart connection, and they'll talk about it, but it's all coming from, you know, leading from, you know, this power center of trying to get power, you know, out here. And that when that can be, you know, just flip that around, where it's like the power is in self-mastery and you connect through your heart first, you know, then everything else would change. I don't know how to like push a button and reset the whole system.
it's person by person. Reboot. It's important.
Oh, what was that?
Person by person by person. And it's important and worthy work. Yeah. And like, as you were talking, Ayana, what was going through my mind is there's no heart in power over. Like love does not exist in a power over paradigm.
Yeah, from that context, we think of love as what someone can do for us, how they can, you know, save us or make us feel better or fit this, you know, it's like an exchange, you know, you do this for me, I'll do that for you, or banding together, like in a tribal sort of way. But yeah, people, then, you know, it's sad because then we don't get to experience what we're really longing for, which is this real love, and then we're never satisfied. And you can never have enough of that kind of power. You can never have enough money if you're trying to have security and love for money. You can never have enough power over other people to be satisfied. You'll never be satisfied.
That's right. I call it the well that can never be filled. It just can't. It's so true.
Thank you. Jen.
Yeah. So, you know, we're moving quickly through this. I wish we could just spend a ton of time on each of these pieces, maybe in another world we can, or another time. But I just, before we move on to this next piece, I really want to underscore that don't underestimate the power of creating awareness, particularly when it comes to beliefs that have never been questioned. Just the creating awareness of like, is this actually what you believe, you know, that you even have this belief, right? That this is better than this, or I need to be that in order to this, or whatever it is, for a client to just see that that's there. And then to be able to see that that's come from a culture that doesn't value them, that can be paradigm shifting for that person. Just that. Before you get to befriend your fear, like any of that, right? Just that, seeing that. Okay. So another perspective that can really help with cultivating self-love, and this has come up a couple of times in the chat already, is cultivating self-acceptance. Cultivating self-acceptance. It is very hard to love what you do not accept. Period. It is very hard to love that which you deny or reject. Period. It is very hard to love that which you fight against. Period. And how often do we fight against parts of ourselves, or not accept parts of ourselves, or reject parts of ourselves? That's when things go into shadow. Like, that's actually the heart of what we do in shadow, is undo all that. Shadow work is undo all that. Now, to be clear, acceptance doesn't mean that you don't have parts of yourself that you want to change. And it doesn't mean that you're not working towards changing those parts of yourself, if it's possible to change them. But again, holding nuances, holding paradoxes, holding more than one thing at a time, it does mean that even as you're working towards changing those things, you accept where you're at. You accept those things. So examples of things that we might not accept inside of ourselves, and this list could go on and on and on. I'm going to just give you some of my own that I've worked on over the years. This is a very short list of many things. But number one, I'm really shitty at giving gifts. I am like a terrible, you want words from me, words of love and validation and support and all the things. There is, you know, an endless supply. But giving an object, like remembering a birthday gift, right? I'm really, so that's something about myself that has become important for me to accept, because I had so much self-judgment and shame, you know, all the things, right? I'm shitty at giving gifts. It is true. And I haven't really worked towards changing that either, much to the chagrin of my husband. But anyway, there we go. I'm never gonna be the mother that gets her kids to play, like, important things, my kids will be there on time. Things where there's maybe some flexibility, I'm never gonna be the mother that gets there on time. I'm never going to be the mother that has freshly baked chocolate chip cookies when they come home from school. I'm not the mother who can play dolls with my kids for hours. It's simply not me. It's not who I am. And that was a piece that I really had to come to acceptance, you know, around my parenting and who I am as a parent. Here's another one, and I know it's not very, I don't know, feminist to say this, but I'm just going to share it, and this is one that I'm still grappling with. I'm working on accepting how my appearance is changing as I'm getting older. Not always crazy about it, you know, but I'm working on accepting that. Am I working on changing it? Yeah, here and there. I started coloring my hair, you know, and like, and I'm good with that too. I used to think, oh, if I really loved myself, then I wouldn't color my hair, right? And everybody has their own truth around that. I'm not, but I'm sharing this to say, like, two things can exist at once, right? I accept that I am aging, and also, like, right now, I like coloring my hair. I feel good about myself when I do. So we want to be moving towards cultivating a compassionate and accepting relationship to those things inside of ourselves that we have been hating on, fighting, making the enemy, or denying. Even if we're moving towards changing them. What are some parts of yourself that you haven't been accepting? What are some parts of yourself that you haven't been accepting? Yeah, and Carla, like I was saying, we each have our own truth. Mine might change at some point. But I love that. I don't color my hair because it's too much. It is an act of self-love to not color my hair. What are the parts of yourself that you haven't been accepting? The part that has a hard time keeping client sessions to their contained time. Yeah. Annalise is saying is not accepting and not liking the same. It's such a good question. Ideally, we want to move. I mean, some of it is semantics. So it depends how, maybe how you define like. What I'd say is, we want to be moving towards compassion and not hating on, denying, or judging. So hopefully that helps. A question that I'm not going to ask you to answer right now, but it's a good one to think on is, what are the parts of others, other people that you haven't been accepting? What are the parts of other people that you haven't been accepting? So how do you move towards this acceptance? So there are a lot of different ways. Some kind of deeper that we cover when we look at shadow. But for now, here are some things that I want to offer that are really can be effective. So one is, remember, even though nevertheless, even though nevertheless exercise can be really helpful with parts that you don't accept. So that's something you might want to play with this week. Come back to that with one of the things you just identified. Another practice that can be really helpful with this is simply stating the thing and then writing about it from an objective place versus a highly triggered place. So calming your nervous system, coming from a grounded place, and then writing objectively, like I'm just looking at the chat right now, AJ, writing objectively, like, I'm the mom whose kids show up to the, me too, show up late to the party and without a gift, right? And just without emotion or trigger, writing a little bit more about that, right? From a just like, well, this is kind of how it is, you know, and the kids have fun at the party and I eventually get around to buying the gift. Sometimes I don't, but I eventually get around to buying, right? Whatever it is. And to that, it, what it does is it's actually back to holding more than one thing at a time. It teaches our nervous systems to not go into fight or flight or go berserk with this fact about who we are, right? It teaches us how to be regulated with this thing about ourselves. One thing that I've added to this for myself, and when I give homework for clients that can be helpful for some people, when you do, just so first simply stating it, right? Like, I'm not good at giving gifts or whatever, or doing the writing. If you search online for bilateral music, so bilateral music is just beats that go back. I'm not going to get into the science of it because I'll botch some of it, but you can do research on this. But basically, research has shown that when our brains like cross, like we do something on this side of the brain and that side of the brain, so sound can do that. That it helps rewire things. So if we do this exercise, I've found with some bilateral beats, it can help take the trauma out of it, the emotion out of it. And then it's just like, oh, yeah, my hair is gray, you know? All right, I'll say one more thing and then I'll pause for a moment. One of the reasons, one of the many reasons why I ask the question of what are the parts of others that you haven't been accepting is because it is our job as practitioners to accept our clients. That doesn't mean that we're not working with them to change some of those things. Again, the two can exist together, but if we can love on those things and accept those things, it really allows for the job to get done in better ways. And of course, as a reminder, in order to accept others, usually we have to be working on accepting more of ourselves. I think of this acceptance work and this, I mean, the shadow work goes like 10 layers deeper, but even just in the way that we're looking at it right now, this is a way, to me, this is a way of life. This isn't just like a strategy that I'm throwing at you. Like this to me is the path that I walk and continue to come back to and commit to. How can I accept more of myself? Where am I denying myself today? Where am I hating on myself today? Where am I judging myself today? How can I bring myself to accept more of that for me? Okay. I'm going to keep on going and then I'll open up for thoughts or questions at the end, just because there are a couple other pieces that I want to make sure that we look at. So here's another perspective that can often help with the self-love piece. And someone mentioned it, I don't remember who mentioned it earlier in the chat as well, or kind of started to allude to it. Supporting our clients to remember that they are connected to spirit, however they define spirit, and to the sacredness of all life, that we are all interconnected in this beautiful mystery of life and nature. Barbara said that. Thank you, Barbara. Because first of all, that this reminder that we are all interconnected, that we are connected to spirit, that we are connected to this beautiful sacredness of life, that all of that is related to the belief that if you are living, you are of inherent value. And just simply for that, you deserve love and wonder and awe. You are a wondrous being simply because you are. And I think that it doesn't matter what the religious beliefs are, beliefs about spirit, right? Or how someone defines it. A couple of kind of notes underneath this piece. So oftentimes supporting a client to connect with spirit, whatever spirit is for them, and that can be God, nature, ancestor, inner wisdom, you know, any of that. But oftentimes that dialogue, no, unless there's, as we looked at in our time, like unless there's like funky ideas about God, right? We're going for like the sacred spirit here. But oftentimes in cultivating a deeper relationship with spirit and with the sacredness of all of life, that can become a corrective stand-in for a loving parent. That can become a corrective stand-in for a loving parent who can remind your client of how sacred and precious and worthy and lovable they are, simply because they are. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? And I'll just share, like, in addition to my work with clients, this is one of my go-tos because I need a lot of corrective stand-in. And like for me, one of the expressions of this is the Great Mother. Like, the Great Mother is always going to tell me how lovable I am, no matter what, no matter what I've achieved that day or that week or that year or in this lifetime. That Great Mother sees me as worthy and lovable and wants to remind me of that any minute of any day of any week. And so for me personally, as well as with a number of my clients, cultivating a deeper relationship with spirit, whatever that your client is gonna call it, can just be so valuable. You can do this as a dialogue, right? Like similar to how we've done either in Befriend Your Fear or Rewiring. You can do this as feeling, this works really well for the Great Mother, but it can work for other expressions as well. Supporting a client to feel like they can lay back in the arms of, and then spirit whispers in their ear and just guide them through that. In homework, inviting a client to write letters to spirit and then have spirit answer letters and share what spirit wants them to know about themselves. Another way to cultivate relationship with spirit and sacredness of all of life, spending time in nature, being in wonder and awe of what it means to be alive. I am a tree hugger. Your clients may not be, because connecting with the trees and the grass and the water and just the sacredness, right? It is very hard to deny your own sacredness when you are connecting with the sacredness of nature. You're part of it. Another practice around connecting to spirit and sacredness of life is inviting a client to observe. Usually I like to say an animal or a child. Like, I don't know if any of you have pets, if you ever just spend time watching your cat and just to be in awe. So the invitation is to be in awe of their spirit. Watch an animal, watch a child, and be in awe of their spirit, not their accomplishments, not even their personality, their spirit, right? Their aliveness. That can create a connection. All right, we have 10 minutes left. Self-care has been brought up a lot today in the chat. So let's talk a little bit about self-care, because I want to offer this as a component or a tool that can help cultivate self-love. I believe, and again, nothing I ever say is the truth with a capital T, it's just for you to try on for yourself, but I do believe that there is a relationship between self-love and self-care. Now, I'm not talking about if I didn't go to yoga class today, like, you know, checking off the boxes because, like, that's what self-care means. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about nourishing yourself. When we can take acts that truly nourish ourselves, that aren't just like checking the box of like putting the moisturizer on or whatever it is, but when we see it as an act of I am nourishing myself, it is actually hard for that not to cultivate just a little bit of self-love in that act. Again, check this out for yourself, but that's really what I personally have seen, and we can open that up for discussion. So it's not a have to, it's not a should, it's not even a like, if I love myself, then I do these things. But what I'm suggesting is using an act of self-care to cultivate some more self-love. And it's going to be different for everybody, right? Like for somebody, it's going to be a bath. For somebody, it's going to be yoga. For somebody, it's going to be making sure they end work at 4 p.m. For somebody, it's going to be soul time for themselves and doing ritual or that journaling time. For somebody else, it's going to be massage. For somebody else, it's going to be getting a manicure or wearing something that you love, doing it intentionally for some people, right? Whatever it is. But the piece that I want to kind of emphasize is the nourishment piece in there. So there's actually, I want us to think about, and there's crossovers, but I actually want us to think about two types of self-care. So one is the nourishment piece. And then another type of self-care is maybe pleasure. Doing things that are pleasurable to us. I notice for a lot of people that when we're like in self-loathing, there is a misaligned relationship with pleasure. So either it can go to either end. It can either be that like you deny yourself pleasure, or there's over pleasure and then you feel guilt and shame about it. So bringing right relationship to pleasure, doing something pleasurable just for the sake of it being pleasurable, not to an end of productivity or achievement or checking off the box of the I did the yoga class, but simply because it is pleasurable. Again, a tool to cultivate a little bit more self-love. All right, I know I'm moving through this quickly. I want to mention one other thing and then I'll open up for some cues. One other thing to think about and support clients to think about with the self-love piece, then this isn't true for everyone, but for some people, is to look at who they're choosing to hang around. And are the people that they're spending time with reflecting, you know, loving them and valuing them and seeing them as worthy? Or is it time to switch up some of those arrangements and who they're hanging out with? Okay. Questions? What are you taking away? What is feeling important? I'd love to hear some voices. Who wants to share, ask a question? Ayana.
When you were talking about the self-nourishing, I've felt that a lot too. It's just, I'm going along with what you said. I'm not saying anything new, but when I remember when I'm showering or putting some oil on my face or my hair or something like that, something that I'm doing anyway, if I slow down and remember that I'm not, like you said, checking the box, but that I'm going, and it barely takes any more time, yes. You know, just take a moment and to breathe and to be aware and to change my mindset, that instead of just being a robot going through the motions, that I'm being present, I'm being aware. And then it brings in that awe of being alive and that moment of, or like if I'm putting something on my face in front of the mirror, instead of just seeing my face as a, like it could be a piece of wood or rock or, well, wood and rock is still alive, but you know, it could be a piece of plastic that I'm just, instead of seeing myself, connecting with myself and being like, hi, I'm doing, you know, like I would with a baby or petting a dog or flirting with a flower or whatever, that I'm, you know, seeing myself as a living, magical, wondrous being instead of an object to just plunk through, you know, that those moments of remembering that and pausing in all, whatever I'm doing, eating, dressing, the things I'm doing already, just shifting, like you say, energetics is everything.
Everything. And there's so many, just a couple pieces I want to pull from that. So number one, that practice helps calm the nervous system, which is going to activate more self-love and just, it's good for our nervous system. Number two, it's going to create a body memory of self-love that we want to pave. And number three, it's paving a neural pathway around I matter. This is important. I am important, right? So it's working on so many levels. Really, really beautiful. Yes. As we're talking about self-care, I'm remembering Angela's question about men and self-care. And I'll toss this, but please, like, this is just one opinion, and other people please chime in the chat. But Angela, what I'd say is that what you were talking about is like men feeling like they can't take care of themselves. That's another patriarchal idea, right? The patriarchy impacts the men too negatively. So creating awareness on that, busting those beliefs, giving a big F you to that can be important. Kelly.
I was just reflecting on the relationship between this one and the time modules and our relationship with time, and just feeling into like when we, I mean, Ayano is speaking to it in part, just the idea of kind of like slowing down. It doesn't take that much more time to do it, but it's relating to there being enough, like within ourselves, enough to go around, enough to like bring back in enough time, enough money, like all the enoughness. But it's also just this place of coming into sacred relationship with this thing that we're often finding the words that we're often kind of in countering, right? Like that we're against, like we're working against time, we're working against like all the money stuff, or we're working against ourselves. But instead it's like really inviting it all in and like putting it in my mind, it's like, how do we hold it in the sacred, all of it? So I don't think I spoke that very well.
No, you did. You articulated that beautifully. And, you know, as you all know, my Virgo self, like very specifically, right? So the our class on the mystery, our class on time, and this class very specifically I put together, because they're all of them related to myth of perfection as well. But these three are really related. Mm-hmm. Good. I really want to encourage you to do some homework around this week. You don't have to do all the homework, but go deeper with this. So for example, if for you, like you're like, oh yeah, that self-care piece, I love what Ayana just shared, or I want to do something more for nourishment or pleasure, please go deeper with that. Take some actions for yourself. If for you it's the spirit piece and the sacredness of nature, write a letter to yourself from the universe, or go out in nature. If for you it's, you're like, oh my gosh, relationship detox from this person, like that's the piece for you. Whatever the pieces are, I just really wanna encourage you to go deeper. And then in your partner practice session, work with one of the pieces that we looked at, either the patriarchal messaging, the self-acceptance, the self-care, or a relationship plan, a plan around shifting some relationships. please continue the conversation in Facebook. I know this is so rich and there's so much here. And I can't wait to hear more on it. So I'm sending you all love and I'll see you next week. Bye. And I'll also hang on. I'm going to turn the recording on. Bye, Wendy and AJ. I'm going to hang on for a couple extra minutes just because I know we covered a lot in a short period of time today. So if anybody